No? Well, let me tell you all about them. The program lasts 3 months. Eso es, dura tres meses. Many different timetables to choose from. From Monday to Friday, Saturdays in the morning. And you'll have plenty of homework. And your teacher will correct your homework and check it to make sure you're making progress. Find out more now. Our trimestrales at Vaughn. Small groups, only 4 to 6 students per class. And the class is focused on speaking and using the language. Contact us and find out about trimestrales with one of our dynamic Vaughn teachers. You won't regret it. No te arrepentirás. More information at GrupoVaughan.com.
Las mañanas son más productivas con Richard Vaughan.
You're listening to Richard Vaughan Live.
Good morning. Welcome. Wednesday, yeah. We're progressing through the week. Yesterday was Tuesday. The day before yesterday was Monday. And today is Wednesday. And it's going to be Wednesday all day long. So let's understand this and let's get ready for a highly productive Wednesday. 7:30 in the morning, it's a good time to start producing. And so sit tight. Sit tight means state quieto y sentado. Sit tight and listen to me because we're going to spend 2 hours together for the moment with the English language. And 10 questions, the 10 typical questions. Ask me 10 questions. Can you name all the countries that make up the European Union? Yes, I can. Is it easy to tell when a person is lying? No, it's not. Should people with fair complexions use sunscreen when they go to the beach? Yes, they should. Do dragons really exist? Yes, they do. Have you ever actually found a needle in a haystack? No, I haven't. Did the early Christian church have a marketing department? No, it didn't. Will a large meteorite strike the earth someday? Yes, it will. Were you constantly getting into fights when you were a teenager? No, I wasn't. Do Muslims eat pork? No, they don't. Do you know any priests who are married? No, I don't. Ex-priests, yes, but not any priests who are married. So, let's go back. Can you name all the countries that make up the European Union? Can you name? To name is nombrar. No solo decir los nombres, pero nombrar como designar a alguien para un cargo. To name. I'm going to name him president of the club, to name all the countries that make up the European Union. Make up is maquillaje, no? Make up? Yes, but the verb to make up has several different meanings. One of them is constituir o componen. Constituyen la Unión Europea. Can you name all the countries that make up the European Union? Yes, I can. Yes, I can. And, but I always forget one or miss one along the way. But I'm going to start. And I'll try to tell you the capital. Okay, let's start let's go clockwise. Clockwise. Clockwise is in sentido de las manos del reloj. Let's go clockwise starting at Portugal. So Portugal and the capital is Lisbon. Spain, and the capital, of course, is Madrid. I don't know whether to include Andorra or not. I don't know. I'm going to put Andorra down below. I don't know if they count Andorra, because Andorra is 1 year run by Spain and the other year run by France. Okay, number 3 is France. Number four is, I think there are 27. There are 27 countries in the European Union. So we need to reach 27. The capital of France, of course, is Paris. Then we have Belgium. And the capital is Brussels. Then we have Luxembourg. And the capital is Luxembourg City. Yes. Then we have the Netherlands. The Netherlands, or Holland, as many people say. The Netherlands, and the capital is Amsterdam, although the seat of government is in The Hague. The capital of the Netherlands is Amsterdam, but el sede de gobierno, fíjate cómo lo digo, seat, como asiento. Seat, the seat of government is in La Haya, The Hague. All right, that's number. Then we have Germany, and the capital, of course, is Berlin. Then we have Denmark, moving north. Denmark, and the capital is Copenhagen. Then we have Sweden. The capital is Stockholm. Norway isn't a member of the European Union. Norway is outside of the European Union, probably because oil was discovered in the North Sea, and Norway has a lot of oil. But then we have Finland, and the capital is Helsinki. Then we have Poland, and the capital is Warsaw. Then we have the Czech Republic, and the capital is Prague. Then we have Slovakia, and the capital is Bratislava. Yes, son 13. That's 13 up to now. And then we have Romania. No, well, Hungary, mejor. Hungary. And the capital is Budapest. Then we have Romania. And the capital is Bucharest. I'm trying to remember. Okay, as we continue, we have Romania. Then we have Croatia. And the capital is Zagreb. Then we have Slovenia. And the capital is Ljubljana. Then we have Austria. That's 18. Hey, I'm getting close. The capital is Vienna. What am I forgetting down? Well, we have Italy, of course. And the capital is Rome. We have Greece. And the capital is Athens. We have Malta. And I don't know. I can't remember the name of the capital. We have Cyprus. Cyprus. What am I forgetting? Okay, we have, let's see, within the old Yugoslavia, we have Croatia, Slovenia. I'm not sure if Serbia is a member. I'm not so sure. It's Bosnia? I'm not sure if it's a member. I always, in the last four, and then the Baltic Republics as well, the Baltic Republics, I think Lithuania, I think all three of them are, Lithuania, Latvia, and Estonia. I think all of them are members of the European Union. So I need two more. That could be Andorra and Liechtenstein, but I don't think they include them. So I need two more. And I would say it's probably Montenegro. And what country? I'm forgetting a big country somewhere in the middle. I've forgotten a big country. I don't know. Let's see. The last one. I'm going to go with Bosnia. Not Serbia. I'm going to go with Bosnia as number 27. Okay, let's find out. Let's see. Members of EU. All right, let's get a list of the members. Austria. Okay, I'm going to go, and I'm going to eliminate these things. Austria, all right, that's one. Austria, Bulgaria. All right, Bulgaria. I forgot about Bulgaria completely. Croatia, yes. Cyprus, yes. Czech Republic, yes. Denmark, Estonia, Finland, France, Germany, Greece, Hungary, Ireland. I forgot Ireland. I hope Fitz is not listening to me. All right. He's going to be disappointed. Latvia and Lithuania. Estonia, no. Ah, yes, Estonia, yes. So the three Baltic republics, Latvia, Lithuania, and Estonia, yes. Luxembourg, Malta, the Netherlands, Poland, Portugal, Romania, Slovakia, Slovenia, and Sweden, and Spain, of course. So, I included Bosnia, which is not part of the... No. Bosnia, no. Bosnia fuera. All right. And Montenegro as well, I believe. Fuera. However, Croatia of the old Yugoslavia. Only Slovenia and Croatia are members of the European Union. North Macedonia isn't. Kosovo isn't. Serbia isn't. And Bosnia isn't a member of the European Union. All right. And I know the capitals of all of them. Well, Bulgaria, of course, is Sofia. Se pronuncia Sofia. And, of course, Ireland is Dublin. Now, the capital of Estonia is Tallinn. The capital of Latvia is Riga. The capital of Lithuania is Vilnius. The capital of Cyprus, I don't remember. Only Cyprus and Malta. ¿Cómo se llama esa ciudad? Oh, in the Greek part of Cyprus. The thing is, Cyprus is divided into the Turkish zone and the Greek zone. The Greek zone is bigger, but I think the Turkish zone could be potentially stronger militarily because of the proximity of the Turkish coast from Cyprus. Cyprus is Chipre. I'm trying to remember the name of the capital of Cyprus. But Cyprus must have two capitals. Capital of Cyprus. Come on, Nicosia, of course. However, Northern Cyprus, the Republic of Cyprus, Northern Cyprus must have a different capital. It must have a different capital. But the Turkish, I don't know how many people live in the Turkish part of Cyprus. Population, I don't know. But I don't know the population. The total population of Cyprus is 1.2 million people. 1.2 million. But that is divided. That's divided. Population of Turkish Cyprus. And we'll find out. We'll find out. 326,000. Greek Cyprus. It's about 1.2 million. All right. So, Turkish Cyprus is not part of the European Union. So, Turkish Cyprus must have a different name. Official name of Turkish Cyprus. I don't know if it has an official name. Northern Cyprus, it's called. Northern Cyprus. All right. The Turkish Republic of Northern Cyprus. All right. It's very small in area, but it's very important for Turkey and for Greece as well. The total area is 3,355 square kilometers. That's interesting. It's smaller than the King Ranch in Texas. It's a little bit bigger than Guipúzcoa, Northern Cyprus. In 1973, there was an attempt, or 1974, I can't remember. Yes, and there was an attempt by the Greeks to take Northern Cyprus. And the Turkish government sent in troops and defeated the Greeks. So it's a very important moment in recent Turkish history. Yes, the moment in 1974. On July 6th, 1974, Makarios, who was the religious leader and also political leader of Greek Cyprus, accused the Greek government... of turning the Cypriot National Guard into an army of occupation. All right. Interesting. I'll have to check up that. I'm not very familiar with that, but I remember it. At that time, that was in July 1974. In July 1974, I don't know where I was. In July 1974, I came to Spain. But I think I arrived in August, not in July. In July 1974, I was probably driving to Atlanta to spend a week with my sister, with my friend Bob Pearson. And then we flew to New York, and then we flew to London. We spent a week in London. Then we took a train to Paris, spent a week in Paris, and then I came personally. He stayed in Paris, my friend. And I came to Madrid, arriving in late July, early August. I don't remember, to tell you the truth. And from that point on, I've been living in Spain since then. So I would say since late July or very early August, 1974, I've been living in Spain. Long time, eh? So this coming July will be the 47th anniversary of my stay in Spain, of my permanent residence in Spain. So, can you name all the countries that make up the European Union? No, I can't, because I missed two. I missed Bulgaria and one other, Ireland. Well, yes, I can name them, but it's my memory of not forgetting one of them or overstepping one of them, pasando por alto. Ireland, my God. Hey, Fitz, if you're listening, my apologies. Is it easy to tell when a person is lying? I don't think so. For me, it's not. If a person is lying to me, it's not that it's easy or difficult to tell. I mean, if they're telling me a total lie, you know, if a person says, "Oh, Richard, I'm sorry I wasn't able to go to the meeting yesterday, but you see, when I left my home, I was kidnapped by a group of Turkish terrorists, and they took me and kept me for 20 hours in a house demanding a ransom. And when they didn't get the ransom, they released me, and that's why I didn't come." Now, if a person tells me that, well, I'm pretty sure that he's lying. Because that's a tall tale in Quentochino. It's, well, a bit difficult to believe. But a normal person, when they're lying, I can't tell. But I can't tell because I am assuming they're telling the truth. As I said yesterday or the day before yesterday, I'm a very trusting person. I trust people. I grant trust initially. If they break that trust, well, okay, sad. But I always initially grant trust. The Spanish expression, fia, fia, pero solo en Dios y en Santa María, I don't follow that. And I think it's better not to follow that. As I said the other day, the opposite is worse. You suffer more and you achieve less in your life. You accomplish less if you're a distrustful person. It's better to be a trusting person, knowing that from time to time somebody will take advantage of that. And you will maybe suffer the consequences, but the consequences are not so dire. Dire means terrible, like dire straits, dire, that you cannot recover from it easily. So, is it easy to tell? Aquí el verbo to tell. Es fácil saber si una persona te está mintiendo. Is it easy to tell if a person is lying? To tell. To tell here has no connection to decir. But we use it a lot. Distinguir, discernir, to tell. I know, it's for me, it's not easy to tell when a person is lying. Should people with a fair complexion use sunscreen when they go to the beach? Yes, people who have fair complexions should use sunscreen when they go to the beach. Everybody really should use sunscreen when they go to the beach to protect your skin, but especially if you have a fair complexion. A fair complexion. How do you say fair complexion in Spanish? Una tez clara. La tez clara. La gente con la tez clara debería usar protección solar, right? Sunscreen. Screen como pantalla. Pantalla solar. Sunscreen. So yes, people with a fair complexion should use sunscreen when they go to the beach. When they go to the seaside. Pero se dice poco, seaside. When they go to the beach. People should, with fair complexions, with a light complexion. If you have a dark complexion, it's less critical, but recommendable, of course. Do dragons really exist? Yes, they do. We were talking about this yesterday. Dragons exist. Because my definition of existence is that the fact of the dragons being existing in literature and in stories and many things and in movies has had a certain impact on humanity. And so they exist, even though they don't exist biologically. But biological existence or geological existence or meteorological existence. What other types of existence is there? I mean, the rain, the snow is meteorological existence. Organic and non-organic existence perhaps covers everything. Or organic and non-organic existence aren't necessarily the only measure for the term, for the concept of existence. The verb exist was not created only to cover organic and non-organic matter. The moon exists, of course. It's inorganic, although I imagine there's some organic matter there somewhere. They say there's some water on the moon and on the dark side of the moon. We don't know. All right, but Don Quixote de la Mancha exists. He exists. Emma Bovary exists. Yeah, Lothario de Tormes exists. Captain Ahab exists. Miss Havisham and Pip exist from Great Expectations. Yeah, they exist. And so, all of these, you know, again, when the verb exist was developed or became, it's a Latin verb, I imagine that nobody specified that it had to be applicable only to organic and inorganic matter. When a baby is born, does that baby exist more permanently or more eloquently than Don Quixote de la Mancha or Sancho Panza exists? You know, who has had more impact on humanity? Me, teaching English on the radio? Or Don Quixote de la Mancha, fighting windmills and undoing bad deeds, desfacer entuertos? Who has had more influence on humanity? Me or Don Quixote? Of course, Don Quixote has much more, much more. So he exists to a greater degree than I do. So do dragons really exist? Yes, they do. All right. Number five, have you ever actually I love this sentence. Question, have you ever actually found a needle in a haystack? Now, why do I put the word actually? Because to find, have you ever found a needle in a haystack? You know, could be misunderstood as a figurative question and not a literal question. Encontré una aguja en un pajar. ¿Has encontrado alguna vez una aguja en un pajar? The answer could be yes, because you're considering the question figuratively. and not literally dentro un pajar de verdad. Mira, una aguja aquí. So I add actually. Actually means en realidad. All right. Have you ever actually found a needle in a haystack? No, I haven't. I haven't even tried. And besides, said, hey, look, there's a haystack. I wonder if there's a needle in there. Probably not once in the history of the world has there been a needle in a haystack. Now, a haystack, you know, it's interesting. A haystack is a montón de heno. Un enar, tal vez. But haystack, aquí dice pajar. I don't understand that. I don't understand that. Because pajar is a straw stack. I mean, the idiom is like looking for a needle in a haystack is based on the idea that it is very hard to find a sewing needle in a haystack, which is a tall pile of dry grass. All right, so it's different. We don't... A tall pile, un montón de hierba seca. That's a haystack. So that's what we say in English. You say, encontrar una aguja en un pajar. Fine. So, but we say, en una montón de heno. All right. Haystack. So, have you ever actually found a needle in a haystack? No, I haven't. And with this, I'll take a break.
El Club Atlético de Madrid, junto con Vaughan, ha creado un campamento de verano donde tus hijos disfrutarán jugando al fútbol mientras aprenden inglés. Dirigido a niños y niñas de entre 8 y 15 años, en grupos de aproximadamente 10 niños por monitor. Fechas, tienes para elegir, del 18 al 24 de julio o del 25 al 31 de julio, como prefieras. Los entrenamientos tendrán lugar en las modernas instalaciones del Centro Deportivo Wanda Alcalá de Henares, sede de la Academia del Atlético de Madrid. Y el alojamiento será, en habitaciones individuales con baño privado, en el Colegio Mayor Aquinas, en la ciudad universitaria de Madrid. Ven a aprender inglés con el campeón de liga, el Atlético de Madrid, y el campeón del inglés, Vaughan. Llama al 91-133-5833 o entra en grupovaughan.com e infórmate. Inglés y fútbol con Vaughan y el Atleti.
You're listening.
Estás escuchando Vaughan Radio. Lo que escuchas
to Vaughan Radio.
Ya está aquí el Beat for Teens. El Beat for Teens es un programa de inmersión intensiva de domingo a viernes para jóvenes entre 15 y 18 años, en grupos de 6 alumnos como máximo. Mejorarán su agilidad oral y comprensión auditiva en 6 intensos días con el método Vaughan. El programa tendrá lugar en un colegio mayor e incluye alojamiento en habitación individual con baño privado, pensión completa, material didáctico de Vaughan y, por supuesto, nuestro equipo de profesores de Vaughan. Llámanos al 91-133-5833 o entra en grupovaughan.com e infórmate. Repito, 91-133-5833 o entra en grupovaughan.com. Beat for Teens, de Vaughan.
Hey, have you heard about our trimestrales? No? Well, let me tell you all about them. The program lasts 3 months. Eso es, dura 3 meses. Many different timetables to choose from. From Monday to Friday, Saturdays in the morning. And you'll have plenty of homework. And your teacher will correct your homework and check it to make sure you're making progress. Find out more now. Our trimestrales at Vaughan. Small groups, only 4 to 6 students per class, and the class is focused on speaking and using the language. Contact us and find out about trimestrales with one of our dynamic Vaughan teachers. You won't regret it. No te arrepentirás. More information at grupovaughan.com.
Estás escuchando Vaughan Radio.
Si tienes hijos entre 4 y 14 años y vives en Madrid, esto te interesa. Este año vuelven los Urban Camps. En los Urban Camps, tus hijos hablarán inglés durante todo el día, sin dar una sola hora de aburridas clases. Aprenderán con juegos y talleres diseñados por nuestro equipo de profesores Vaughan. Cada día con un tema distinto. Crazy Science, un viaje espacial, artes escénicas. Y mientras ellos aprenden inglés divirtiéndose, vosotros, papás y mamás, podréis seguir tranquilamente con vuestras obligaciones en esa semana sin cole. Horario de 9 de la mañana a 5 de la tarde con posibilidad de ampliación. Comenzamos la última semana de junio y podrás reservar las semanas que necesites hasta final de julio. Los Urban Camps tendrán lugar en diferentes colegios de la Comunidad de Madrid. Así podrás escoger el que mejor te venga. ¿A qué esperas? Llámanos al 91-133-5833 o entra en grupovaughan.com e infórmate de todas las opciones que te ofrecemos. Repito, 91-133-5833 o grupovaughan.com. Los Urban Camps de Vaughan. Si tienes alguna duda o necesitas información sobre cualquiera de nuestros cursos, llámanos al 91-133-5833. Repito, 91-133-5833.
You're listening to Richard Vaughan Live.
Hello and welcome back to our second half hour of today's Wednesday edition of Richard Vaughan Live. 8 o'clock in the morning. It's 8 o'clock. It's 8 a.m. What we don't say in English, we don't say 8 o'clock a.m. 9 o'clock p.m. No. If you use the expression a.m. or p.m., don't include the expression o'clock, all right? We say 8 o'clock at night, 8 o'clock in the evening, 8 o'clock in the morning. Or 8 p.m., 8 a.m. The word o'clock doesn't mean anything. No significa en punto, como piensan algunos. O'clock doesn't mean en punto. 8 o'clock means las ocho. Nada más. O'clock es un apéndice, como el apéndice humano que no vale para nada. So, the appendix. It's just 8 o'clock. Well, it's 8 o'clock in the morning now. It's 8:01. So, we have a lot to do. Did the early Christian church have a marketing department? No, it didn't. Will a large meteorite strike the earth someday? Yes, it will. Were you constantly getting into fights when you were a teenager? No, I wasn't. Do Muslims eat pork? No, they don't. Do you know any priests who are married? No, I don't. Are you under pressure to learn French? No, I'm not. Have you ever been attracted to radical political movements? No, I haven't. Is tourism an important source of revenue in some countries? Yes, it is. Does the future of our planet depend on the stability of the sun? Yes, it does, among other things. Is the cattle industry important in Argentina? Yes, it is. All right. Did the early Christian church have a marketing department? No, it didn't. In fact, the term marketing really didn't begin to appear until after the Second World War. The term marketing, which was to a sophisticated way of approaching the sales effort. Because many of the people who fought in the Second World War went to the university, went to college after the war on the GI Bill. The GI Bill. Bill es un proyecto de ley, una ley. La ley para los soldados americanos. When they came back from the Second World War, the American government financed their higher education. So many returning soldiers, instead of starting to work, they went to the university to get a degree in higher education. That was a very, very important decision by the government. That and the Marshall Plan for other countries. But the GI Bill was very, very important. GI Bill. Una ley aprobada en el 44 en beneficio de los soldados norteamericanos que combatían, con el fin de proporcionarlos después un mecanismo legal para acceder a la financiación de estudios técnicos o universitarios, junto con una pensión que ayudase a su subsistencia por un año. A lot of soldiers took advantage of this, including my father, who probably didn't need it, but nevertheless. And so a lot of people, they all became, let's say, more intelligent, or at least better educated than the previous generation. And when the world of business began to pick up after the Second World War, a lot of thinkers began to think, how can we improve the sales in this growing economy for different companies? Well, the support of sales, el apoyo a la acción comercial. And how? Well, through different activities, which soon became known as marketing. Marketing. The history of marketing. And so they decided, okay, what kind of support does the sales effort need? Well, the sales effort needs help in creating image, good brand image, improving the distribution channels, good advertising, good sales promotion and merchandising. Merchandising is publicidad en el punto de ventas. In merchandising, good public relations and communication. And so these efforts began to grow and become more important. And finally, they took on a life of their own, marketing. In many companies, the marketing department and the sales department are separate and reporting as they're two completely different departments. I don't necessarily agree with that. What you call here director comercial, in important Spanish companies or multinationals, el director comercial, it's usually that person has influence or control over el área de marketing. But there are many companies in which you have a director de marketing who's independent from el director comercial. Of course, there are different jobs. The marketing department's job is to provide support and to make it easier to sell for the sales department, by improving the brand image or by improving the physical packaging and to make it more attractive, by improving by good advertising. And so when the salesperson visits the shop or the client or the customer, if you say, ah, sí, Coca-Cola, me suena. That nombre es, le compro la bebida. All right, fine. Baugan. Sí, me suena. Why? Well, because we have a very powerful marketing tool, which is the Isvon Radio. This and other activities that we perform, of course, including television, including online things, social networks, and of course the teachers. The teachers are incredibly powerful ambassadors of our company. So, shall we continue? But back in the Christian church, the early Christian church, even before they didn't have a marketing department. But they had a super salesman. Yes, sir. The early Christian church, which often used the sign of a fish, not the sign of a cross. I don't know when they stopped using it. When did the early Christians adopt the cross as the symbol? I wonder. The 4th century. The adoption of the cross as a Christian iconographic symbol arose in the 4th century. Surgió. Before that, no. It's a surprise for some people. It supplanted the fish. Before that, the sign of Christianity was un pez. Early Christians used a wide variety of symbols to express their faith. The second century Christian teacher Clement of Alexandria identified a dove, a fish, a ship, a lyre, una lira, the musical, and an anchor, ancla, anchor. A dove is una paloma de campo, no de ciudad. A fish, a ship, a lyre, repito, una lira, and an anchor, ancla, as suitable images to be engraved on Christians' rings. Archaeologists have discovered a gold ring from the 3rd or 4th century that depicts an anchor, cross, lamb, shepherd, dove, and the abbreviation for Christ. So, but I think the most common was the fish. In fact, because Christianity was illegal, really, a lot of times they used the sign of a fish to communicate by drawing the image of a fish on the dust, on the ground. So, whatever. But it's interesting. But they didn't have a marketing department, but the early Christian church had a lot of crack salespeople. And, of course, the most famous salesman was Paul, Pablo de Tarso. You say in Spanish. We say the Apostle Paul. Although he wasn't a member of the original 12 disciples. And I think he never met Jesus of Nazareth. Although he was in Jerusalem right after the crucifixion. He was there. He witnessed and was involved in the stoning of Stephen. Stephen, you said, I suppose, the stoning of Stephen, Saul, o sea, Paul, the stoning of Saint Stephen. It took place sometime between 33 and 36 A.D. Right after it. It was, according to the Acts of the Apostle, he was a deacon in the early church in Jerusalem, un decano, who angered members of various synagogues by his teachings. He was accused of blasphemy when he made a speech denouncing the Jewish authorities, and he was stoned to death. Su martirio, his martyrdom, was witnessed by Saul of Tarsus, Saul, or Saulo, they say sometimes, also known as Paul, a Pharisee and Roman citizen who would later become a Christian apostle. But I don't know exactly when Paul, on his way to Damascus, yes, his conversion, but I don't know when it was exactly, what year. But in any case, he was by far the most influential person in the birth and growth of Christianity. If he had not been converted, maybe Christianity never would have taken hold in the Eastern Mediterranean. But he planted the seeds. He planted the seeds for the growth of Christianity in the Greek-speaking world, el mundo de habla griego, what we call el mundo heleno, the Hellenistic or the Hellenistic world. And because that world was the religious world, Rome was not really religious. They followed the Greek gods, Jupiter, Hera, Mars, Venus, Minerva, etc. And those are adaptations of the Greek gods. But the Romans were more interested in law, in conquest, in architecture, and not really The Romans didn't have a strong connection to the gods. But the Greeks, yes, the Greeks with their mystery religions, they were very, let's say, conscious of gods and goddesses and things. And so they were much more prone to being, to the idea that Paul took to the Greek world. And the Christianity adapted a lot of the Greek mysteries, a lot of the concepts of the Greeks into Christianity. Christianity really is a fusion of Greek philosophy and Greek mystery religions and Judaism. Interesting. It's an interesting debate to what extent Christianity is a Greek phenomenon or a Jewish phenomenon. If it really, where did it come from? But it's interesting. But let's go on. So, did the early Christian church have a marketing department? No, it didn't. No, it didn't. Will a large meteorite strike the earth someday? Yes. Yes. I hope it's not today. I hope it's tomorrow, maybe. Well, I hope it strikes the earth after I'm gone. I don't want to experience the destruction and cataclysm of a meteorite striking the earth. We say meteor, meteor, meteor. And we have two words, meteor and meteorite. Now, a meteor, meteora, meteoro, I don't know how to say, I don't know if you say, meteor, a meteor. Aquí dice meteoro, un meteoro. No, meteoro. Hay dos. Pero un meteoro. People here don't say meteoro. We do in English say meteor. Meteoro, cualquier fenómeno atmosférico que se produce sobre la superficie terrestre, a excepción de las nubes. Un meteoro. Oh, that's good. Cuerpo sólido, pequeñas dimensiones, procedente del espacio que cae a la Tierra, atraído por la gravedad. However, that's a meteoro. You can also say meteoro, meteoro. Look, periodo, periodo. It's the same with that. That once the meteor enters the Earth's atmosphere, we change to meteorite. Meteorite. So you say, what's the difference between a meteor and a meteorite? Meteorito, meteoro y meteorito. What's the difference? Like meteorites, meteors are objects that enter Earth's atmosphere from space. But meteors burn up before reaching the ground. The term meteorite refers only to those bodies that survive the trip through the atmosphere and reach the Earth's surface. Okay? Okay, McKay. Got that? Got that means end this? Do you understand? Got that? Got that? All right. So usually when we refer to, for example, asteroids that have crashed into the Earth, it's a meteorite. A meteorite is an asteroid that manages to survive the entrance and to finally reach the Earth and boom, and eliminate the dinosaurs, for example. What we need is a meteorite to come down and eliminate English teachers. All right. So let's go on, shall we? The question was, will a large meteorite strike the Earth someday? Of course. Because time is infinite. As long as the Earth will probably continue as a planet orbiting the sun for another 10 billion years. So many meteorites will strike the Earth. Humanity, mankind as we know it today, will probably disappear sometime down the road. Sometime down the road. En algún momento, camino abajo. O sea, más adelante, en el camino. We say down the road. Sometime down the road. Mankind will disappear. Something else will replace it or whatever. Or the Earth will organic matter will disappear, and it will only be inorganic, like apparently other planets are. I don't know. We'll see. Well, we won't see. I won't see. Pero es un dicho. Ya se verá. Ya veremos. All right. But yes, meteorites will strike the Earth in the future. But probably not in my lifetime. A large meteorite. Maybe not in my life. Surely not in my lifetime, and probably not in yours either. Were you constantly getting into fights when you were a teenager? No, never. Never. I never got, only once. But I didn't really get into a fight. I just pushed the guy. He was getting fresh with Patty Palumbo. And I started pushing him down the halls. And, no, what was I? You know, I intervened. Okay. To protect my girlfriend. I think I was 17. Because I remember the building. You see, the school, Memorial High School, where I attended. The main building, just behind the main building, is a secondary building, smaller. And I took some classes there. I think the only class I remember was the engines class, the class in engines. So it was a building for a special type of classes, motores, you see. But if I go into, I can probably find that building, and that's where I pushed him around. I said, don't stop bothering her. Okay, Tulsa Memorial High School. I'll find it. It's right here. I found it. Very good. Now I'm going to try to put it. Let's see. What I want to do is to do the satellite image. I don't know how I can find this. I don't remember how to do these things. Satellite image. Let's see. Mostrar tu ubicación. No, no. Aquí está satélite. All right. Now I have it. Yes, I see the building perfectly. I see that building perfectly. And that's where I got angry with this guy and almost had a fight. But he backed down. To back down is achicarse, dar marcha atrás, to back down. But I wasn't the type of guy to get into fights. I was an easygoing, fun guy. But to back down, to back, as a verb, to back away, we use that, to back away is retirarse, ir, dando marcha atrás para alejarte, es to back away. To back down is recular, retroceder, echarse atrás, dar el brazo, torcer un poco, to back down. To back off, retroceder también, the feeling of prepositions in English. To back out. Echarse atrás. Desvincularse. Retirarse de un compromiso. You're not backing out now, are you? Anda. Tomorrow is the big day. El atraco mañana. Vamos a dejar el banco mañana y ahora te retiras. Te echas atrás. You're backing out. We're going to rob the biggest bank in Spain. We're going to rob the Bank of Spain tomorrow. El Banco de España. Yeah. The gold reserve. It's in the basement of the Bank of Spain. Really? The gold reserve? Yeah, we're going to rob the bank. Don't back out now. But back down means empiezas a aplicar presión y luego te achicas, te acobardas un poco. That's to back out, to back down. But it doesn't mean necessarily you're a coward. It doesn't mean that necessarily. Okay, but let's go on. No, I never got into a fight. Your question is, were you constantly getting into fights? Estabas tú constantemente involucrándote en peleas. To get into a fight. Se dice así, to get into, como si entrases dentro de una situación de pelea. To get into a fight. Did you get into a fight? Yeah. Were you constantly getting into fights when you were a teenager? No, I wasn't. I never did, not once. Almost, con atole, but only once. Do Muslims eat pork? No, they don't. It's prohibited by their religion to eat pork. Pork is carne de cerdo. Cualquier tipo. Ham, bacon, whatever. Pork chops, chuleta de cerdo. It's no. They don't eat pork. And the Jews don't eat pork either. The Hindus don't eat beef, but they eat pork. The Muslims and the Jews eat beef. The Hindus don't eat. They don't eat beef, but they eat pork. Now, the Jews and the Muslims eat beef, but they don't eat pork. So, really, it's always based on religion. If you go back 3,000, 4,000 years, there are probably reasons. I'm sure there are reasons, because eating uncooked pork it can be dangerous because of trichinosis and other types of diseases. But in any case, it's understandable. Nowadays, they don't know what they're missing. I think I'm going to go. Voy a cruzar la calle y comer torreznos right now. When the class is over today, I'm going to go eat some torreznos. But in the meantime, I have one more hour to go, so I'll be right back. I'll be right back.
¿Quieres recibir clase conmigo? Pues si quieres, tienes 200 horas de clase de inglés gratis en RTV a la carta. Ve a Google y escribe Baugan RTV a la carta. Y presto, ahí verás más de 370 clases de media hora y cada día se añade una más. Desde principiante hasta avanzado, te llevo por todo lo necesario de mi idioma. Píldoras potentes de inglés. También hay libros de texto que acompañan al curso, pero son opcionales. Con o sin ellos, aprenderás mucho inglés o mejorarás mucho tu dominio. Pruébalo en Google. Baugan RTV a la carta. Ahí nos veremos.
¿Quieres apuntarte a un curso de inglés y no sabes cuál escoger? ¿Por qué no pruebas nuestro curso trimestral de Baugan? Son solo 3 meses, no pierdes nada y te aseguramos que vas a ganar mucho. 3 meses en los que podrás ver cuál es tu nivel real de inglés. 3 meses en los que trabajarás tu listening y speaking en todo momento. 3 meses en los que subirás ese nivel tanto que, pues, que querrás otros 3 meses y otros 3. Entra en grupobaugan.com e infórmate. Curso trimestral de Baugan.
Hey guys, are you sitting around your home just wondering what to do? Well, why don't you sign up for Vaughn's English class via video conference? That's right. Now you can have the best teachers in the comfort of your own home. You'll get personalized attention because there's a maximum of only 6 students per class. Give us a call, 91-133-5831. Learn English with Vaughn via video conference classes. Sign up now.
El Club Atlético de Madrid, junto con Baugan, ha creado un campamento de verano donde tus hijos disfrutarán jugando al fútbol mientras aprenden inglés. Dirigido a niños y niñas de entre 8 y 15 años. Llama al 91-133-5833 o entra en grupobaugan.com e infórmate. Repito, 91-133-5833 o grupobaugan.com. Inglés y fútbol. Con Baugan y el Atleti.
A Vaughn English class is not the same as other English classes. In a Vaughn English class, time is optimized to the max. Every minute counts for your company. Every minute counts for your English. It's all a question of mathematics. The more you practice key structures of the language in every class, the more confident you will be when you use them in real life. And the more effective you will be as a communicator in English. And in this global world of ours, communicating effectively is absolutely key to success. By means of face-to-face classes or video conference classes, Vaughn will make all the difference for your English. And you will make all the difference for your company.
Más información en Barcelona en el 933398687. En Madrid en el 911335831.
Pásate a vernos a la tienda de Vaughan. Sí, ya está abierta. Ven y nosotros te asesoraremos con el material que te puede ayudar a mejorar tu inglés. Con libros especializados en